Unlike his first time entering the tavern, Jason didn't feel compelled to dissemble. He motioned with his hand, and his zombie guards fanned out around him. Suddenly, he felt an icy blade slide against his throat.
"Why, hello there. You look awfully warm-blooded to be in this part of town."
"You new around here?" a flamboyant voice asked from behind him. Jason motioned for his guards to stand down and replied evenly, "Hello, Jerry. I actually came to see you." Jason pulled back his hood, slowly revealing his face. He heard a chuckle from behind him, and the knife withdrew.
"You don't say. I'm quite the popular guy today. All of these guests coming to my humble establishment."
Second note to self, do not screw with Jerry. Jason turned and found Jerry standing inside of his circle of guards, casually picking his fingernails with his dagger. At least he would have been picking his nails if there had been any still attached to his hands. Taking a closer look, Jason realized he was actually prying scabs from his decayed fingers. Jerry turned milky eyes in Jason's direction and looked at him coyly under his floppy hat.
"I'm quite the beauty, no?"
He laughed at his own rotten joke.
"Oh, do get that expression off your face. I actually prefer the change of pace," Jerry continued. "Did you know that I no longer need to breathe or sleep, and am now immune to poison? Not resistant to poison, immune to poison."
He sighed wistfully and held his hand to his non-beating heart.
"It's every rogue's dream."
Jason replied hesitantly, "Well, I'm glad that you prefer the change. You mentioned that the others have already arrived?"
"They have indeed," Jerry answered, and led him through the bar and down the small stairwell leading to the training room.
Once they made it inside the underground room, Jason glanced around. Grunt was in the process of setting down a large table in a corner of the room. He was definitely no longer a half-ogre. He now resembled some form of bulbous monstrosity. He had been muscular before, but now his arms and legs were twice as wide, and his veins seemed to glow a ferocious green.
Is that Grunt?"
"Why, yes," Jerry said glibly. "He is quite fond of his new body as well. He was strong before, but now he is simply the model of male masculinity. Speaking of which, don't shake his hand, unless you want to lose yours."
As Jason approached the table, Grunt lived up to his namesake by snorting in his direction. Jason nodded politely and took a seat at the table. Onyx had followed the pair into the room. He promptly jumped into his waiting lap bed and immediately fell asleep. Rex and Morgan took a seat and eyed him cautiously. Morgan seemed completely unchanged by the conversion that had swept the city. Whether that was due to the distance of the graveyard from the city, or her particular profession, Jason wasn't certain. However, Rex was now comprised entirely of bleached white bone from head to toe. His bony fingers drummed the table in a cascade of small rattles. In place of his eyes, he now had two black orbs that seemed to pull in light, like miniature black holes. They were a bit eerie, since Jason couldn't quite tell where Rex was looking. Once everyone was sitting around the table, Jason cleared his throat.
"So, the three of you are probably wondering why I asked my zombies to summon you here."
Morgan interjected sarcastically,
"We're also just a bit curious about how Lux has now been converted into a dark city. What is it called now, the Twilight Throne? I'm assuming you must have something to do with that."
"That may take a bit of explaining," Jason began.
"A bit of explaining, he says," Rex chimed in.
His voice seemed to emanate from nowhere, and his jaw made an odd clacking as he spoke. Jason flinched.
"Okay, maybe a lot of explaining."
He launched into the story of what he had uncovered regarding the noble's plot to cover up the death of the former regent and to sell Lux to Maria, The explanation regarding the guards' complicity in Jason's discovery that they had been siphoning off most of the city's tax revenue drew an irritated growl from Rex. Both Jerry and Morgan raised their eyebrows in surprise. Jason explained that he had decided to punish both the guards and the nobles. He was forthright in explaining that his decision was motivated by equal parts greed, justice, and rage. The conflict had escalated beyond what he had expected, and he had soon destroyed most of the city, as well as almost everyone in it. To be fair, he was a little embarrassed as he explained this last part. As tantrums went, this one had been pretty epic. When he reached his conversation with the old man and the spell he had cast to change the city, Morgan gasped and leaned forward in her chair excitedly. Jason explained that he had been presented with a choice, to destroy the city or to build something new. He had chosen to build something that suited his profession, which had warped the city into its current form. As he completed his story, the three sat and stared at him in silence. Each seemed to be mulling the story over carefully, their expressions difficult to read. Jason's pulse quickened. He wasn't certain how the group would react. Onyx took this opportunity to open one eye lazily and give Jason a look that said simply, "They're probably going to kill you." "Damned cat." Finally, Morgan spoke.
"If the Dark One has given you his blessing, and so will I. This is quite a change, but I have to say that I'm excited by the possibilities to experiment with this new source of dark energy."
Jerry nodded in agreement.
"As I said upstairs, I'm fond of my new body. If it's possible, I think I may actually be a bit more handsome, don't you think?"
As he twirled his mustache, a large chunk of hair fell away from his face, along with the skin. The three others just looked at Jerry with a deadpan expression, and he crossed his arms in a mock sulk. Jason looked at Rex, who had stayed silent during the explanation. After a moment, Rex looked at Jason and asked in an eerily quiet voice,
"Do you notice anything different about me?"
A long, awkward silence followed.
"You seem to be a skeleton," Jason finally said weakly.
"A regular genius we have here," Rex exclaimed. He thumped his bony hands on the table. "I have no flesh, you understand. Zero."
He leaned forward, and the twin orbs of energy that were his eyes bored into Jason.
"Do you know what specific part of my anatomy requires flesh? Do you?"
he asked menacingly. Jason looked frantically at the others for help, fear coloring his eyes. They both turned away quickly.
"Rex, I'm..."
Rex interrupted him with a mad cackle.
"That look on your face. You look like you were about to wet yourself. Damn, that was probably worth losing the family jewels. Can't say I was using them much in my old age anyway."
"You're an asshole, Rex," Jason sputtered as the others laughed at him. Even Morgan chuckled at the jab. Once they had quieted down, Morgan turned to Jason and asked with a raised eyebrow,
"I expect you didn't bring us here just to explain what happened to the city. There's something else, isn't there?"
Jason nodded. He didn't sugarcoat it for them. "There's an army approaching the city, and it will be here in 6 days. It's comprised of both travelers and soldiers from Maria intent on destroying this place. The old man has asked me to defend the city." He looked at each of them. "I need help if I'm to have any chance of fending off the army. What I would like is for the three of you to become members of the city's new governing council."
"Are you mad?" Rex asked skeptically. "What will we know about ruling a city?"
"Alone, not much. But together you represent three important areas of strength for the city. Jerry is a grandmaster thief who has operated a black market within the city for years. Not to mention, he has a sophisticated network of spies. Assuming the members of that network are still alive, that is."
Jason paused for a moment and looked at Jerry, who was trying to stick his mustache back on his face. Or unalive, I suppose. Turning back to the group, he continued, Morgan is a Grandmaster Dark Mage and will be able to provide training to the undead within the city. My guess is that most of them will have a natural affinity for dark magic. She is also probably the only person familiar with the local resident's new complexion. As for Rex, he is an experienced warrior and has been with the guard for decades. He knows how to train troops and command them in battle. He no doubt has some experience with large-scale battles, such as the one we're about to face. Jason looked at each of them pointedly. Working together, I think that the three of you could bring this city back from the brink and train a new army to defend it. I also think that you would become capable leaders in your own right. The three of them sat in silence for a moment and pondered this thought. Jerry spoke up first.
Why would the people here follow us?
Because I have the blessing of the Dark One, and I am the prospective regent of the Twilight Throne, Jason replied evenly. He paused for a moment before adding with a grim smile, Also, if they don't follow us, we will destroy them, and they won't be coming back this time. His eyes shone with unholy light as his manner responded to the dark tenor of his message. Morgan chuckled and eyed him with a hint of pride.
You make a compelling case for obedience.
We will need resources, Rex piped in. Training is one thing, but the troops will need weapons and armor.
Jason already had a plan ready for that particular question. I've sent the remainder of my thieves to secure the administration office at the training grounds. There is an incredible amount of gold sitting in a cellar under the office. The city's missing tax revenue, in fact. I believe that I can use the traveler vendor in the marketplace to buy our equipment once the market has been repaired. He looked at the three and shrugged. Why not buy what we need from our enemies to arm ourselves? I also like the idea of driving up the price of goods so that the other players have trouble equipping themselves. Rex clapped his bony hands together with a rattle and a grating sound.
That sounds like a damn fine start to me.
Morgan chimed in.
It seems we're all agreed then. What would you have us do?
Jason explained the bones of his plan. He wanted each of them to find and conscript residents of the city that seemed to have a knack for each of their specialties. They needed to train them as quickly as possible. They could also include new players within their ranks, but they were to prioritize training the NPCs. Jason didn't trust the players to respond reliably and not betray him. If they needed anything for purposes of their training, Jason told them to contact him and he would see to it immediately. He also asked Rex to scout the perimeter of the city and see how well fortified the walls were. They needed to repair any weak points before they were attacked. Jason anticipated that this fight would eventually involve a siege, and he needed to make certain that the walls were in good condition. As the discussion turned to forming the city's army, Jason took the opportunity to review his own summoned minions. Summon information. Control limit 38, zombie level cap 137, current summons 28, type of summons 21 guards, 5 thieves, 1 fire mage, 1 ice mage. Jason was now well below his control limit. There were also no longer any corpses to raise now that he had converted Lux into the Twilight Throne. At least his remaining zombies were immune to decay. They could continue to grow stronger indefinitely. Acting on a moment of inspiration, Jason decided to give Morgan, Rex, and Jerry his minions to train. Morgan took both his mages and 2 of his guards with high dark magic affinity. Jerry took all of his thieves and 10 of the guards, and Rex took almost all of his remaining guards. He had decided to retrain most of his zombie guards to thieves after watching how the two groups performed in the city. Maybe at some point Jason would command a legion, but for now, he needed a group that specialized in stealth and subtlety. Jerry was to ensure that his thieves were all proficient in sneak, sneak attack, small-bladed weapons, and bows. Jason told him to place special emphasis on training ranged weapons. He knew that they would be fighting out in the open in the future, and he needed ranged troops. An evil little smile curled his lips as he considered the damage his thieves could cause by attacking from sneak with ranged weapons. Jason also instructed Morgan to loan the mages to Jerry for a small amount of time each day to see if they could learn the sneak skill. The mages were far from resilient. He needed them to learn to stay out of sight before they struck with their spells. For his own protection, Jason kept two guards that he planned to rotate with the zombies Rex was borrowing. With his plan in place, they started to adjourn the meeting and shuffle toward the stairs.
"Wait!"
Jerry exclaimed. They all turned to look at him.
"We are forgetting something incredibly important."
He gestured for the group to come back to the table and continued in a hushed tone.
"This is really a matter of life or death urgency for our group."
He paused to let the tension grow.
"We need a name for our new club," Jerry said with a grin,
his floppy hat bouncing as he vibrated with excitement. Refusing to take part in Jerry's silly nonsense, Morgan rolled her eyes. Rex chuckled.
"What would you suggest, innkeeper?"
"Oh, no. How about the Grave Society?"
Jason winced at the pun.
"Ha! No. I have a much more auspicious name for our group. It needs to be something suitably terrifying."
Jerry scratched at his decaying chin as he continued.
"We are governing a city with as striking a name as the Twilight Throne, after all."
He paused dramatically.
"How about the Shadow Council of Ultimate Evil? Dun, dun, dun."
The three of them just stared at Jerry.
"Are the sound effects actually part of the name?" Morgan asked. "Maybe we could just shorten it to the Shadow Council," Jason suggested.
Rex nodded his bony head as he considered the new name.
"I don't hate it,"
Morgan grudgingly admitted, which was probably as close to approval as she was going to get. Jason finally spoke up.
"Well, it's decided, then. Let's adjourn the first meeting of the Shadow Council."
"Hopefully it won't be our last,"
Rex muttered as they headed up the stairs. Chapter 24 Armed. Riley Jones sat astride a horse as it ambled along a beaten and dusty road. Her long blonde hair flapped in the breeze. Her leather armor creaked and groaned as the horse moved beneath her, and the string of her bow dug into her shoulder through the leather. Players and NPCs were squeezed together within the narrow confines of the road, and a thick cloud of dust had been kicked up into the air by the pounding feet and hooves. She was traveling in a caravan of hundreds of people. Many rode horses or drove wagons, while others walked the hard miles on foot. As she saw several people ahead of her walking the long road to their destination, Riley counted herself lucky for the horse. That was where her luck ended. She glanced in front of her and saw Alexion astride a gigantic white charger. He was wearing full plate armor which gleamed in the sun. Alexion spoke with one of the aides in a magnanimous way, likely about the details of the trip and the supply lines for the NPC army. He looked regal, the type of person that would command the respective armies and save damsels. She could feel her hatred for him seethe in her veins.
"Why am I here?"
she murmured to herself, her voice heavy with resentment. Alexion finished his conversation with the aide and reined in his horse until he was even with Riley.
"Why aren't you riding up beside me, my dear?"
he inquired in a courteous tone.
"I just wanted to speak with some of the other members of your army," she said, striving to keep her voice even and polite. "I just wanted to be as far from you as possible," she thought bitterly.
Each time she had to maintain her pleasant facade, she could feel a little piece of herself being chipped away. She rebelliously guarded her secret, bitter thoughts. Alexion leaned in close to her, and his regal mask dropped for a moment. His cruel, indifferent eyes seemed to mock her, and he spoke in a hushed tone.
"Remember our arrangement, Riley. You need to be a good girl and stay near me."
She did remember. She wouldn't ever forget. Riley nodded mutely, keeping her head bowed and her eyes on her hands holding the reins. Someone observing her would think she was simply a demure blonde-haired girl being courted by a handsome knight. The truth was that on the inside, Riley was seething with anger, resentment, and disgust. Alexion's mask reappeared instantly.
"Good. Now that we understand each other, I need to meet with the NPC generals.
Don't drift too far. We wouldn't want you to get hurt."
For a moment, a cruel glint flashed in his eyes. As she watched his gleaming back trot away, the familiar feeling of helplessness welled up inside of her.
"How could I let it come to this?" she muttered to herself, as frustrated tears budded in the corners of her eyes.
Jason sat at the desk in his room at the Sow's Snout. His fingers drummed against the wood of the table as he stared into space. Maps and troop rosters were spread across the table in a chaotic sprawl, while stacks of reports and inventories lay in haphazard piles along the edges of the desk. Dark circles shadowed Jason's eyes, and his back was hunched with fatigue. In stark contrast to Jason's anxious and haggard appearance, Onyx lay curled in his lap, snoring softly. 2 days had passed since the first meeting of the Shadow Council. In that short time, the group had made significant progress in training the residents of the Twilight Throne. The last 2 days had been a mad rush to ready the city for the invasion of the encroaching army. Morgan had found nearly 50 residents who had a high affinity for dark magic to train. She had quickly appropriated one of the estates on the north side of town to act as her new magic school. The students had progressed quickly under her rather grueling tutelage. Jerry had also managed to recruit approximately 100 residents with a proclivity for stealing things. He had proceeded to beat all of them within an inch of their lives, which was exceedingly hard to do considering they were already dead. Then he would heal them and start the process over again. His training methods at least demonstrated that healing potions still worked on the undead. Jason was intimately familiar with Jerry's approach to teaching, and he pitied the group. Regardless, Jerry's training bore fruit, and his group had progressed tremendously in skill level since they began. The training grounds had been reinvigorated and redesigned by Rex. He had done away with the wooden instruments and laissez-faire attitude that had once been acceptable on the grounds. Now new players and NPCs alike were being put through rigorous drills designed to make them battle-hardened. All practice bouts were performed with real weapons, which quickly increased the resilience of the fighters and got them accustomed to real fighting. Nearly 250 NPCs had already undergone his training. Jason didn't include the player population in his troop calculations. In his experience, they were unreliable and frequently logged off or refused to take orders for no reason. Or maybe he was only seeing the idiots and crazies that had decided to roll an undead character. He had discovered that few new players were willing to create an undead character or start in the Twilight Throne. Beyond the stigma of playing as undead, Jason expected that many players were reticent to roll an undead character because they thought that Alexion would win the upcoming battle. If he did, they would be stuck with an unplayable race for a real-world month until they could re-roll their character. To be honest, Jason didn't blame them. At least one happy result of the rigorous training was that it had quickly become apparent that being undead came with a number of bonuses. The undead didn't need to eat, drink, or sleep, and their stamina drained much slower than living creatures. They were also immune to poison, and only massive injuries incapacitated their limbs. The most significant bonus was that the undead received a sizable stat increase when fighting in darkness or near the Twilight Throne. From what Jason had read through the RogueNet forums, many people had already fought undead creatures in-game. He learned that being undead also came with some significant downsides. Notably, they were weak in direct sunlight. They were also vulnerable to spells from the fire and light affinities. He had already seen videos of Alexion's abilities and knew he used light magic. He was certain that Alexion had thought to bring plenty of fire mages. Jason was going to have to be especially careful of AoE attacks during the upcoming fight. Once the troops had risen in skill levels, Jason had the three council members order them into smaller units. Each unit was comprised of one mage, two rogues, and five soldiers. He organized each set of 10 units under a single commander. He referred to these larger groups as divisions. This left him with 50 units, or five divisions. Overall, the entire undead army numbered approximately 400 members. Jason had ordered individual units to go out and hunt the local area around Twilight Throne. He needed them to level quickly and learn to fight together. This proved to be a successful practice. Since the NPCs didn't need to sleep and were undergoing relentless training, the average level of his troops was already close to level 20. He expected that after another 4 days, they might be able to hit level 40. With the stat bonuses for fighting near the Twilight Throne, their effective level should be close to level 50. Overseeing the training and the council members had also granted Jason a useful new skill, and he had leveled it rapidly over the last few days. New passive skill, leadership. Extensive micromanaging of both your minions and the residents of the Twilight Throne has given you insight into the role of a leader. Some may call you a nag, but you are undoubtedly effective in training your troops. Skill level beginner level 3. Effect, minions and subjects will receive a 2% increase to skill learning speed. Apart from the sarcastic language of the prompts, the leadership skill had helped to greatly increase his minions and soldiers' skill acquisition and leveling. It helped explain why they had progressed so quickly in just 2 days. Jason had pored over the geography of the area near the Twilight Throne. The spell he had cast in the market had warped and changed much of the wildlife and fauna, but the maps he had found in the city were still mostly correct. His brow furrowed in concern as he reviewed his troop roster and the maps once again. A part of him kept hoping that the numbers would magically change if he checked them just one more time. "I don't know how we're going to do this," he finally said into the silent room. Onyx shifted in his lap and looked at him with sleepy eyes. "I just don't think we're going to be able to take them in a straight fight or a siege," Jason continued, looking at Onyx. The cat simply blinked slowly and laid his head back down. Cats would make terrible strategists, Jason thought with a chuckle. A knock at his door interrupted his thoughts. "Come in," he called out. The door creaked open, and Jerry's smiling face popped out from the edge of the door.
"Hey there, stranger! Are you up here, perusing your dusty maps again?"
Jason could already feel a headache coming on, and he massaged his temple. "Yes, I am. I don't know how we're going to win this fight, Jerry. It just doesn't seem possible." Even though the new troops were progressing well, Jason's fledgling army was still less than one-third the size of Alexion's. He knew that the average level of his troops was much lower as well. Even taking into account the home turf advantage and the penalty to good alignment players and NPCs, his troops would be crushed in a straight fight. Jerry moved into the room. He pursed his lips and rubbed his chin in thought for a moment.
"I'm afraid I don't have an answer for you. I personally have never been one for wars and such."
He assumed a swaggering pose.
"I've always been more of the roguish sort. You know what I mean, don't you?"
He waggled his eyebrows suggestively at Jason.
"We only do things from behind."
Almost before the words left Jerry's mouth, Jason's face was firmly planted into the palm of his hand. Then Jerry's words started to sink in. Apart from his stupid one-liner, he had a point. Jason didn't need to approach this fight like a typical war. That was probably what Alexion was expecting, but Jason wasn't being forced to follow conventional rules. That certainly wasn't how he had conquered Lux. After some consideration, Jason decided that he was going to do what he did best. He was going to sucker punch them. Jason looked back up at Jerry, and a mischievous smile curled his lips. His eyes shone darkly, and the almost forgotten chill crept up his spine.
You know what? Your terrible joke has given me an idea, Jerry. Has anyone ever told you that you have the prettiest eyes when you're contemplating murder?
Jerry said coyly, as he flipped the tip of his floppy hat. Then he broke into a big smile.
I'm glad I could somehow be of assistance.
Jerry continued.
By the way, Rex sent over some requests for equipment. I think that the market is finally back up and running, and he wanted you to go purchase some equipment for the troops.
Jason sighed. Great. More errands. Let me see the list. Jerry obliged and handed over a mass of papers.
Wow.
This is ridiculous. Rex was asking for a ton of equipment. Jason was going to have to basically clean out the market to purchase all of this stuff. Although now that he thought about it, he still needed to place his items in escrow so that he could sell them on RogueNet. He had been prevented from doing so while the market was being rebuilt. He slapped his thighs and then dislodged Onyx as he rose. Well, maybe it's time for a field trip. Thanks again for your help, Jerry.
It is no problem, O great Dark Lord of Terror, Jerry said enthusiastically.
Jason stared at him blankly.
What? If you do happen to win this fight, won't you be the new regent? Jerry asked in a reasonable tone. You're going to need a suitably fearsome title.
Jason opened his mouth, and Jerry waved a hand at him.
No, don't worry. That was just a first try. I have a bunch more. For example, how about the Bone Lord?
He hesitated briefly, then continued.
Ach, no. On second thought, I could see how that one could be misinterpreted.
Jason sighed and quickly fled the room with Onyx close on his heels. Jerry followed them most of the way out of the inn, shouting out different titles. His antics drew confused looks from the inn's patrons. Jason grimaced as he passed them by. Once Jason and Onyx had made it most of the way down the street, Jerry thankfully gave up. Onyx glared at Jason accusingly.
What? I didn't get him started on the names.
30 minutes later, the pair made it to the reconstructed market. Jason wore a hooded cloak and kept his face covered whenever he walked around the city nowadays. He expected he would become a target once the players saw his face. He wanted to avoid this issue for as long as possible. The stalls were now all back in place, and the area teemed with activity. Somewhat surprisingly, an undead market looked much like a living one. Undead vendors advertised their wares, as NPCs and players went about their business. Admittedly, the crowd was a bit thinner than Jason remembered. He was probably responsible for that. Jason and Onyx made their way to the in-game vendor, and Jason summoned his zombies from around the city. Once his zombies had assembled, Jason ordered his guards to cordon off the area around the vendor. Some of the players saw how many zombies were under Jason's command and smartly backed away. However, a few players decided to pitch a fit. With a gesture, Jason's guards permanently silenced the less intelligent players. One of the advantages of being the self-appointed interim leader of an undead city was that you could mete out punishment instantly. Players who were too stupid to take a hint were sent back to the real world for a 3-hour cool-off period to reflect on their mistake. Onyx gave Jason an approving look. Apparently, the cat didn't like stupid people either. Upon witnessing the casual murder of several players, the vendor stared at Jason in terror He was an average-sized, middle-aged zombie with a pot belly. His large magical loot sack sat beside him, and he held a long manuscript in his hand. In some ways, he looked a bit like an undead Santa Claus. Jason grinned at the trembling man, only his mouth showing under the hood of his cloak. "We're going to need to purchase some items."
"Certainly, sir. Anything you want."
Jason began spending gold at a remarkable rate. He was forced to dip heavily into the funds he had found in the administration office to purchase the items on Rex's list. Any leftover gold would be spent rebuilding the infrastructure of the Twilight Throne, assuming that there was anything left of the city in 4 days. The vendor frantically pulled items out of his bag. At first, he set them gently on the ground, but as Jason's spending spree continued unabated, he just started throwing them at the zombie guards as fast as he could. The amount of gear that was being purchased really was spectacular. A crowd of players and NPCs had gathered around to watch the spectacle. Onyx stood beside Jason and glanced at the onlookers with a taunting expression that said,
"Yeah, I'm with this guy."
Soon the spending spree slowed and then stopped. Jason managed to purchase most of the items on Rex's list. The other players would likely be upset when they discovered that Jason had cleaned out certain types of items, primarily weapons and armor. Once he was finished, Jason took the opportunity to put his own items in escrow. With all that taken care of, he considered whether or not to buy some equipment for himself. Rex had insisted that Jason use some of the funds from the administration office to equip himself. Jason was a bit reluctant to spend the gold when he knew there were innumerable city expenses that needed to be covered, but he conceded that Rex had a point. Jason would probably be in the thick of battle, and he couldn't afford to die. He would need anything that gave him an edge. Between the gold he had stolen from the nobles and his allowance from the administration office stash, he had nearly 52 gold left. This was a veritable fortune at this stage in the game, and he eventually decided to splurge a bit. After carefully reviewing his equipment menu, Jason determined that he could wear a total of 8 rings and 1 amulet. He could also wear individual pieces of armor on his head, chest, shoulders, hands, legs, and feet. Alternatively, he could purchase armor in sets, like the leather armor he had found on the grave robber. He also had a cloak slot, but it appeared that many cloaks did not provide stat bonuses. Likely, the players had not yet encountered higher quality cloaks at this point in the game. After searching through the store, Jason decided to purchase 8 rings that added willpower. These items weren't in high demand, since most casters preferred to stack intelligence to increase their damage. In total, the rings set him back 6 gold. Forceful ring times 8. An ordinary but effective ring, quality C, durability 15 of 15, plus 2 willpower. He couldn't find anything that was an upgrade for his amulet, which added plus 5 willpower. This was really the only piece of gear he had found that seemed to be high quality and benefited his particular class. Moving on to his armor, he was initially a bit uncertain regarding what type to buy. Armor was broken into several different categories: cloth, leather, mail, and plate. However, Jason didn't see any point to wearing mail and plate since he had neither the strength to carry it, nor the vitality to withstand an attack even with the damage mitigation from the armor. That left cloth and leather. Cloth armor tended to provide bonuses to intelligence and willpower, but would probably make him stick out as a caster. That could draw unwanted attention from other players. In every MMORPG Jason had played, casters were typically targeted first, since they did a large amount of damage and were relatively easy to kill. Most of the robes looked impractical and didn't seem like they would allow him to run and move easily. On the other hand, leather armor typically provided bonuses that weren't immediately useful to a necromancer, primarily dexterity, strength, and endurance, but they would draw less attention and would likely be easier to move in. Maybe at some point I can find decent leather armor and have it enchanted with caster stats. He ultimately decided leather was the best way to go, and he should focus on items with dexterity and endurance. After looking through the various individual pieces of leather armor, he got frustrated trying to mix and match items to get the stats he wanted. Ultimately, he decided to just purchase a decent set of leather armor for 12 gold. Night Howl Armor, full set. Crafted from the skin of the moon wolves known to frequent Western Andara, this armor provides solid protection and improves its owner's speed and endurance. Quality, C. Defense, 50. Durability, 100 of 100. Plus 10 dexterity, plus 10 endurance. Finally, Jason moved on to weapons. Again, he was left with a hard decision. There were some staves available that provided bonuses to willpower and dark magic. He didn't have any combat skills with staves, though. They also seemed like they would be unwieldy when he was trying to run and maintain stealth. He decided daggers and throwing knives were still the way to go, and he again focused on equipment with dexterity and endurance. Cruel Dagger times 2. A weapon crafted by a blacksmith with some skill. The blades have been serrated to increase bleeding, and they have been enchanted to increase the wearer's dexterity and endurance. Quality C. Damage 26 to 38. Pierce. Durability 35 of 35. Increased bleeding chance. Plus 3 dexterity. Plus 3 endurance. Superior Throwing Knife. A solid choice when close-up fighting must be avoided. Knives may be retrieved once thrown. Quality C. Damage 15 to 23. Pierce. Quantity 10 of 10. The daggers had set him back 15 gold. Decent weapons seemed to be selling at a premium at this stage of the game. However, Jason decided it was probably worth it. Other players had likely had a chance to undertake some quests and run dungeons for loot already. Jason had been too preoccupied, first with Morgan's nearly impossible murder quest, and then his impromptu rampage around the city, to pick up the typical beginner gear. He had found some items, but nothing besides the amulet that was really helpful for his class. Lastly, Jason purchased a stack of 20 mana and health potions for 2 gold. They were expensive, but worth it. He assumed that most players hadn't had a chance to advance their trade skills much since AO's release. There were likely only a handful of players at this stage of the game that could craft items like potions. Yet he knew that the potions would be essential in the upcoming fight. After he had finished shopping, Jason had spent 35 gold on items and had only 17 pieces remaining. This made him wince, but he was confident that he'd made the right choice. Once he equipped his items, he had to admit that he at least looked pretty cool. He was now clothed in dark black leather armor with black fur fringes. His hooded cloak hung around him like a shroud, concealing the daggers and knives hidden about his person. He was probably going to lose this upcoming war, but he certainly would lose it in style. Jason then checked his character status to see his current stats with the new gear. Character status, Jason, male, level 61, necromancer class, human, chaotic evil alignment, fame 0, infamy 2200, health 410, health regen 0.35 per second, mana 3800, mana regen 19.5 per second, stamina 660, stamina regen 3.6 per second, strength 12, dexterity 36, vitality 11. Endurance 36, intelligence 22, willpower 344. Affinities, dark 30%, light 4%, fire 3%, water 2%, air 3%, earth 2%. His stats were starting to look respectable. One-on-one fights clearly weren't his strong suit, but Jason had built his character around summoning minions. He had also become quite talented at hiding and running away. He noticed that his infamy had gone up considerably, and chalked it up to destroying a city. Looking around the market, he noticed some angry-looking players waiting to use the vendor. The vendor himself also seemed quite anxious, and was nervously shifting his weight from one foot to the other. I must have been staring into space for some time. He grinned at the players and motioned for his zombies to follow him. Once they had made their way out of the market and had found a secluded alley nearby, Jason sent the zombies carrying the equipment to Rex at the training ground. Their orders were to hand over the loot and then follow Rex's instructions. He kept two zombies with him for protection. Jason's next stop was Morgan's school. He had been overwhelmed the last couple days trying to prepare for the upcoming war, but he wanted to speak with her regarding whether he could learn any new spells, now that he had increased both his level and his dark affinity. He approached the building that Morgan had appropriated for her school. Jason noted that she had used her status as a council member to take over one of the more luxurious noble houses in the north side. This actually seemed fitting to Jason, since a school of dark magic should have a prominent place in his undead city. If he somehow managed to survive this war, he ought to turn the other estates into public buildings of one sort or another. A city library would be useful. Maybe I could also start some kind of school. Jason found Morgan sitting in an office on the second story of the estate. The room was crowded with bookshelves, and her desk was covered in stacks of open books. As he walked in, Morgan didn't look up from the book in front of her. He suspected that she must have investigated the nearby manors and stolen any books on magic she found. That was the only way she could have accumulated the enormous pile he saw before him. I'm probably looking at Morgan's treasure trove right now. Jason approached the desk and stood there for an awkward moment. Morgan completely ignored him, her attention focused solely on the book. His patience wearing thin, Onyx jumped up on the desk and sat directly on the book Morgan was reading. He seemed to look at her with an expression that said, "What now, old woman?" "Damned cat," Morgan muttered. She then glanced up and noticed Jason. "Oh, hello, Jason. I didn't notice you there." She waved at the books on the desk. "I've been a bit preoccupied. You wouldn't believe the books on magic these nobles managed to collect." "I'm certain they must be interesting," Jason answered diplomatically. "How are your pupils doing?" Morgan replied dismissively. "Oh, they're fine. They're all generalist dark mages, but they're coming along nicely. They're out slaughtering the wildlife and then raising the corpses and then killing them again. It's great practice." Jason chuckled. "I actually came to see you about my own training. I was wondering if you are able to teach me any new spells." "Ah, well, let's see here." Morgan seemed to look through him for a moment. "Oh, my. You have indeed progressed a great deal. Your level and affinity are sufficient to learn a new set of spells." Before Morgan could move on, Jason interjected. "I've been meaning to ask, what exactly does my affinity do? For example, I gained 5% dark affinity for completing a quest." "Well, that question doesn't lend itself to a simple answer," Morgan replied, as she assumed her usual professorial air. "These lectures always make me feel like I should be sitting in a classroom, taking notes." Morgan began her explanation. "A person gains or loses affinity based on whether they behave in a way that is consistent or contradictory to each affinity. For example, you gain dark affinity if you act on your desires. If you resolve quests in a way that is consistent with a particular affinity, you may receive bonuses to that affinity. I expect this is what happened with your particular quest."
"That makes sense. As the old man said, I gave myself over to my desire for revenge and power when I rampaged through Lux."
"Your ability to learn spells is a function of both your level and your affinity," she continued. "Of the two, your affinity is much harder to raise.
Over time, it takes a much more significant commitment to the trait represented by a particular affinity to increase it.
So the rampage around Lux was actually a windfall in a way. I will need to be careful to balance acting on my desires in a way that is still constructive.
I suppose that all makes sense, Jason said. So, I guess I get to select some spells now?
Morgan chuckled, amused by how eager he was.
Yes, and just like the last time, you will only be able to choose three. You may choose any of the old spells you gave up last time, or any of the new spells from the list.
She waved her hand in his direction, and a prompt appeared.
Oh, by the way, I have included more detailed information regarding the various spells this time. Hopefully this should save us some time discussing your options.
She said this last part with a grimace as she turned back to her book. Spell selection. Curse of Silence is a curse, costing 200 mana. A curse that silences your target for 5 seconds, preventing speech and spell casting. The length of silence increases with spell level. Blight Ray is an offense spell, costing 85 mana. The caster casts a ray of dark magic at his opponent, causing 100 disease damage. The damage scales with the spell's level and your intelligence. Virulent Disease is an offense spell costing 400 mana. Your dark magic infects a target, causing the target to receive poison and dark damage over time. The damage scales with intelligence and spell level. Summon Zombie Spell is a summoning spell costing 300 mana. You may raise a dead enemy as a zombie. The zombie's level is dependent on the level of the dead enemy. The control limit is dependent on your willpower. Zombie Lieutenant Spell is a unique summoning spell costing 1,000 mana, sustained. You may cause a zombie to become self-aware and intelligent. You may train the enhanced zombie to think autonomously and command other minions. Intelligence of summon increases with spell level. Control limit is calculated as willpower divided by 100. Separate control limit. Summon Skeleton Spell is a summoning spell costing 600 mana. You may raise a skeleton using nearby bones. The skeleton will be recreated in the default form of the original creature. A nearly complete skeleton is required. The skeleton's level is calculated as the caster's level plus willpower divided by 75. Minion level scaling increases with spell level. Control limit is calculated as willpower divided by 10. Shares control limit with other undead. Custom Skeleton Spell is a unique summoning spell costing 1500 mana. You may raise a skeleton using nearby bones. The player may design the skeleton using available bones or choose a default skeleton. Mana cost is the same regardless of whether a customization is made. The skeleton's level is calculated as the caster's level plus willpower divided by 75. Minion level scaling increases with spell level. Control limit is calculated as willpower divided by 10. Shares control limit with other undead. Enrage Spell is a summoning spell costing 100 mana. You cause one of your summoned creatures to enter a frenzy, increasing damage and stats. Increases to damage and stat scale with spell level. However, the enrage status increases the decay rate of your summon. Jason stared at the window for a few moments with his brow furrowed. These were difficult choices. He was leaning towards selecting Curse of Silence, since he had already experienced how powerful a decent enemy caster could be. He was also considering whether the spell could be used to silence a target before it was assassinated. That left two spells. A direct damage spell would be useful, since he didn't have one. However, flashy spells would just draw attention to him, and he didn't have enough intelligence to put much punch behind them. What he really needed were more summoning spells. He decided Zombie Lieutenant was a priority, since it would allow him to split his army without being forced to give minutely detailed instructions. That left one additional spell, and he decided that this one was also a no-brainer. He was going to choose Custom Skeleton.
It sounded like this would give him an unusually large selection of options to choose from in creating minions. Jason turned back to Morgan. I've decided on Curse of Silence, Zombie Lieutenant, and Custom Skeleton. She looked at him evenly.
I can't say I'm surprised. I would quibble with you about the usefulness of Custom Skeleton, though. You're going to need to have a large assortment of bones to be able to get much use out of that spell.
I actually thought that it was an obvious choice. Now she is making it seem like a gamble. I might be better off taking Enrage. That could turn my zombies into berserkers for a short time, especially since there is no decay near the Twilight Throne. He decided to ask some questions first. How does summoning skeletons work? Do I need to have every bone that made up an original skeleton to summon it? Morgan stared longingly at her books and sighed before answering.
Of course you have questions. I shouldn't have expected anything different. To answer your question, no. Usually you can make do if you have most of the bones for a skeleton. Let's say 90% as a rough approximation. Your mana will fill in the rest.
Do skeletons level in the same way as zombies? The prompt indicates that they will be set to a level dependent on my personal level and my willpower. Morgan scratched her chin as she responded.
Skeletons aren't really my specialty. I've always preferred zombies. However, in my experience, they don't level. Essentially, summoning skeletons doesn't make you as picky about the corpse, but their potential is lower. They don't start with any abilities, and they don't get stronger over time.
Jason was still intrigued. Skeletons could be much stronger if he were mass summoning creatures, assuming, of course, that he had an ample supply of bones. So what about creating a custom skeleton? How does that work?
Well, if you were standing near a large number of bones, you should be able to design a skeleton using your available resources. I also understand that you can save the designs. Again, skeletons are not my area of expertise. You will have to experiment.
What should I do? I'm still intrigued by the idea of creating my own skeletons. Jason hesitated for a moment and then made a decision. I'm going to go with my first choice. I will take Custom Skeleton. Morgan frowned, obviously annoyed that he didn't take her advice.
Don't say I didn't warn you.
With that, she pressed her hand against Jason's forehead, and the words and gestures associated with each spell trickled into his mind. He could have sworn she gave his head a little push before she drew her hand back.
Now, if that's all, I have some reading to do, Morgan said gruffly as she turned back to her book.
Clearly, he was dismissed. Shaking his head, Jason walked out of the office. Onyx padded silently behind him. As Jason stood outside the door, he considered what to do next. What he really wanted to do was try his new spells.
Well, Onyx, what do you say we go visit the graveyard?
Chapter 25 Creative. It was dusk in the game world, and the army had stopped for the evening. The NPCs went about their usual routine of setting up camp, caring for the animals, and cooking dinner. Riley had observed that nearly two-thirds of the army was comprised of NPCs, which made for an unusually realistic march towards the Twilight Throne. She was standing a bit apart from the player campsite, which itself was set up in a hasty manner, some distance from the busy NPC encampment. The players usually logged off during the in-game evenings, leaving little need for an elaborate camp. The NPCs had also made it clear that they weren't interested in putting up with naive travelers after a long day on the road. Riley had built a small mound of branches, and then laid a cotton target she had borrowed from the NPCs over the mound. She was 50 yards from the target. Between the campfires and numerous lanterns, there was still sufficient light for her to make out the beige cotton from this distance. Riley pulled the string of her recurve bow back until it was even with her ear. She carefully sighted down the length of the arrow. Her breathing slowed, and then stopped, the world seeming to still around her.